Hello, America, how are you? You love that, don't you? Hello again. welcome once again to the original unoriginal podcast episode. I don't know what it'll end up being, but it is with great pleasure that for the third time over the past 48 hours of recording that I welcome my guest today. Yesterday was his 24th birthday. My guest again, Nick Melton.
Hi, everybody.
Yes. You know, he delightfully coined a good title for these episodes we recorded last night. The Drunkisode, he called them. And I think we're going to make it a trilogy. We, of course, had the sexy Drunkisode, the comic Drunkisode, and now I've dubbed this Drunkisode the morning after.
Yes. That's what it is.
Because it is the morning after. We've had a hearty sleep of about 6 hours, and yeah, I feel really rested, actually.
Yeah, me too.
We are now enjoying some delicious scrambled eggs, and I was like, you know what? Let's make it a trilogy. Let's eat eggs and talk about random shit. So, delicious eggs, for one. Nick Melton has made a delicious dish of scrambled eggs with each of us.
Well, it's the easiest thing to make in the world, really.
Indeed.
But they're always good.
Yes, yes. I'm hoping this will kind of be a good way to start us off, a good way to get our creative discussion juices flowing. We were just discussing, as we were calling this Drunkisode the morning after, we were, of course, discussing the episode of South Park, in which the only way to destroy a succubus is to sing the lyrics to the song The Morning After backwards.
Well, they can't do it, so they just play a tape backwards.
Exactly. See, I don't even know the words, but I know it sounded kind of like that stilted. That's all I remember.
Well, everything sounds stilted backwards.
It's true. Especially the dread pyramid of It's Lich Lit Lich Litzel.
I would like to hear that backwards.
I could probably make it happen after we record this.
That would probably actually sound very similar in real life, too.
It's
backwards to the way it sounds forward.
Yeah. It's Lich Lit Lich Litzel. We are, of course, referring to a location found in a delightful episode of the series we were discussing briefly on the previous episode entitled The Middleman, which we just finished watching the first disc of the complete series mere moments before we started recording, and we're about to start disc two after we get done with this here breakfast conversation.
A breakcast, if you will.
Breakcast. See, you gotta stop giving me good titles. Because
all you gotta do is change one letter.
Drunkisode the morning after, a.k.a. breakcast. This is gonna be a long one. Let's make it like... No, because there's like an episode of Smodcast where it's about, or it's like, they recorded it in, is it Bronson? Branson? Branson? Brampton? Something? Canada? I've forgotten the name of the town.
I have no idea.
Well, anyway, it's the hometown of Wayne Gretzky. Because his father, Walter Gretzky, does this tournament every year for like local street hockey teams and Kevin Smith and his few askew people. Pardon me, taking a bite of egg. They partook this year and recorded a live Smodcast on stage. Brantford, that's the town, there we go. In Brantford, is it Ontario? I want to say it's Ontario. Could be wrong about that. Could be Alberta. I don't remember. It's a Canadian province. The point is, they recorded one there, and I'm trying to remember how we got there. How do we get to that discussion of Brantford?
I don't know. That's the way conversations go.
Literally, we are at the fourth minute of the podcast, and we are forgetting something that happened 2 minutes ago.
That's probably not a good sign.
That's really probably not a good sign. That's a lack of sleep and a lot of wine and...
Well, one bottle between two people isn't too bad.
It's true. I'm kind of sad we didn't get more intoxicated than we did.
Oh, well. There will be more chances in the future.
That there will. Because that's the beauty part of us recording three episodes. Because by the time the third episode gets posted, it's probably the next time we're together to record.
Nice.
It probably work out about just about that way. Because, of course, I still, as of this recording, have not edited what you folks will know as, I believe, episode 7, which is about, which is myself and Mr. Worth Beasley discussing Mighty Morphin Power Rangers the movie. So this is a ways back for some of you.
So, what is the general rate of release on these things? Do you try to release one weekly?
Now that I've got like a good rhythm going and a lot of good guests and a lot of good topics already kind of set in stone, definitely trying to do it on a weekly basis. When I first tried this experiment last summer, I did it over a course of 3 weeks. We did about 3 or 4 episodes with myself and my good friends, the Syak brothers. And then this past summer, or just before the summer started, we recorded 2 episodes with Greg Green in May that were released 1 week after the other. And I was intending, when I came back to do summer session at my university of choice, to record more with Greg, but that didn't happen. And so I went on yet another hiatus from the OUP, the Original Unoriginal Podcast, as it were, until I came to see my good friend Nick here on the occasion of his 24th birthday in this new town in which he lives. So, there. Delicious eggs. Nick has finished his plate.
I have. I make no presumptions about pacing myself. I just eat what I have, put it away.
Right.
It's probably bad, like, in a restaurant. You probably should pace yourself in restaurants so it doesn't look like you're just snarfing all your food down.
I'm always concerned that I'm snarfing my food down. I go to the cafeteria at my university of choice, and which they've renamed into something that if I tell you the new name of it, it would give away where we are, but...
Oh, they changed the name, really?
They changed the name of a lot of things. Like, for instance, screw it, I'll go ahead and tell you a couple things. They changed the name of the school cafeteria from The Calf to The Spartan Restaurant. And it now extends from this means nothing to you listeners, I'm just telling Nick. It now extends from the main entrance where you used to go swipe your purse card and then go around, and there's like the big area where you get your food, and then there's like the healthy section of the cereal bar. And then you go around and there's like the end of the cafeteria. Well, now they've gotten rid of with Spencer's,
they
the fancy
rid of
restaurant.
Spencer's?
They got rid of Spencer's, and they've sort of just made that a secondary or tertiary dining room. It's all open. They have the same cash registers at every entrance now, which, to their credit, that's something they should have come up with, or to their discredit, that's something they should have come up with a long time ago.
Well, Spencer's was like the haven for people who didn't want to eat bad cafeteria food.
I don't think that, in their defense, I've never had a problem with cat food.
Well, yeah, it's not horrible, but...
I mean, it's also like, when you are as desperate for money, or if you are as dependent on financial aid as I've always been, cafeteria food
is a necessity.
It's a necessity.
Well, at the end of my run at the University of Choice is, I did a lot of Spencer's. I like the fact that they made pasta for me right in front of me.
Well, there is.
But I will say that your little revelation that is now called all things the Spartan Restaurant. Note the disdain in my tone of voice. Is that there are so many schools with Spartans as the mascot that
there are, so we're kind of protected.
What other strange choices have they made?
Well, first of all, I would like to say one more thing in defense of the calf food, which is, and I'll still call it the calf because
that is
the real name of the Spartan restaurant. They could suck it. They got a new food vendor.
Not Aramark anymore.
Not Aramark anymore, which is kind of sad because in the last few days of Aramark, they had started putting out these delicious homemade Nutri-Grain bar type desserts that were so delicious.
Oh, cool.
Granola and tart fruit fillings. Tasty. But we don't have Aramark anymore. We have, I don't know who the new people are, but the food is markedly higher quality. But there's less of it.
Ah.
You see. Like, the salad bar is a lot less thorough. There's only like 7 fixins and then dressing, as opposed to like the 20 fixins that were on the extensive salad bar we used to have. But it's like lettuce, tomatoes, cucumbers, cauliflower, broccoli.
Yeah, those are the strangest salad ingredient combinations you could ever have.
Just wait, shredded cheese, mushrooms, onions. And I think that's it. No, shredded carrots. But that's
okay,
it.
Okay, well, you could make a decent salad.
Yeah. And then they have bacon bits as an extra down at the other end of the bar. They've gotten rid of the dessert section at the one end, and they've actually put dessert. There's a section they used to call the Cool Star Station. Now I'm getting a little more specific. There was a section they used to call the Cool Star Station. This is actually after your time, where they had... It was where the health section was. I don't know if you remember where the health section was. Well, now that is now just the massive dessert bar. The entire thing is surrounded by various desserts.
Changes. I loathe them.
I'm
going to come back and...
We fear change.
I'm going to come back in 20 years and the university will look nothing the way I remember it.
No, you ain't kidding. Let me tell you something. They're putting in a new humanities or mathematics building, I don't remember, in the parking lot of, we'll just say the business school building.
That's what that construction is.
Yeah, they've gotten rid of the parking lot and they're putting a new building there, which I actually think is...
A parking lot-sized building?
Parking lot-sized building.
That's stupid. The parking lot was tiny.
It's like four stories. It's going to look like a giant...
It was a tiny building.
It's going to look like a giant greenhouse that houses math or humanities. I forgot. I think it's math, but...
Well, that's the smallest building in the world. And yeah. You should know better.
Well, not only that, it's the fact that at our particular university, I know this is something that this is a problem they have at really every university... Parking is just a bitch and a half, and now...
You couldn't park in that parking lot anyway.
Though. Well, no, but it was a parking lot for commuters. And now they've gotten rid of that, the commuters are going to want the regular parking lot, and I'm sorry, but I ain't giving up my space.
Yeah, that was a bad move on the park.
Then again, there's a lot of bad moves on the park.
I don't understand half of the executive decisions at that school.
Nor do I. However, they have decided not to demolish the quad dorms.
Oh, that's good.
They're going to remodel them because that's the intelligent thing to do.
Yeah, and also it's the quad. You can't destroy the quad.
At our particular, at that particular university, folks, the quad dorms. Every university has a quad. I hate saying that every university has a quad because they're.
That's true.
To recognize that there's a quad is to just further continue college stereotypes. I feel, but
we do have a quad.
But we do have a quad, and they are the oldest buildings on campus. Some of them, I did some research recently. Some of them are as old as they were built in 1919.
Oh, the good. I'm glad they're not destroying them. We should keep intact what little history the university has.
It's true. They remodeled the faculty center last year as well. Or they just finished it up, actually.
You know, I've only been gone for a year.
And a lot of things have changed. Oh, how about this? Declining balance on your first card is now called flex.
Someone shoot me in the face.
I know.
Please.
And the first card, oh, that's not even it. The first card is now called the Spartan card.
Well, that's actually, I think I already knew that.
Well, that
I probably met that revelation with disdain, too.
Yeah, I just, it's, although if you have a first card, you can continue to use it.
Well, my first card is so old that the blue layer on top that has all my information on it is peeling off.
I know a lot of people who have a card that old.
Yeah, well...
But because I took my...
I like my first card because it has, by far and away, the best ID photo of me ever taken. So I keep it.
I can't imagine. Like, I know the visual will not help these people, but what do you mean by that?
Oh, I'm actually smiling. Whereas on my driver's license photo, I looked like I'm drugged and... Well, by drugged, I mean I look high and also simultaneously drunk. It's a very strange-looking picture. And I'm really glad that I have a new address now and therefore have an excuse to get another license. Also, my license says I'm under 21, when I am, in fact, 24. So...
Well, that's right. I think mine still says I'm under... No, mine. I got mine when I was 21.
Well...
Trivia about your host, Jeff. I didn't get my driver's license until I was 21. Not because of some arbitrary, you know, the parent says you can't have your license till you're 21. It was because... car insurance in this country is ungodly expensive, and it was the only time I could afford to do it, and I've never looked back.
Well, I didn't really care at all about driving or cars or anything in high school, so I never really rushed to get my license.
No, neither did I.
I just sort of got it at some point because I figured it would be handy if I could drive myself to school.
There's part of me that thinks that certain events in my life would have been different if I had been able to drive.
Right.
Like certain things with the fabled girl that got away. That was the part of the conversation we had back two drunkisodes ago. During the sexy drunkisode. But that was, I'm not even sure I referenced it within the context of the episode. It may have been during that, holy crap, the air conditioner just turned on, like, hour of non-recorded conversation.
And the air conditioner, very loud in this place. Especially the downstairs one, which was the one that came on last night.
Yeah. I just realized, you know, you've got your indoor air conditioner on now because I, as the pampered bitch that I am, woke up and said, I woke up in pools of my own sweat 5 times last night, Nick.
Is that really true? Or?
This is actually true to know. I woke up last night and my hair was soaking wet.
Oh, I'm like, sorry.
Which is why my hair is probably an absolute hot mess right now.
I wasn't hot last night, so...
Well, you're also far thinner than I am. I'm what people would probably call a fat ass.
I wouldn't go that far.
I'm nowhere. I tell you, this is a, kind of a sick story. You can always find someone who's got it worse than you, you know. And so I was walking down the one of the boulevards on campus the other day. And this guy walked by who, and he's actually in my mafia film class.
You have a mafia film class?
I do, and it sucks.
Oh, that had such potential.
It did, but it's terrible. It's because it's poorly organized, and the teacher is very self-centered, and it's just not
Do you at least
great.
Get to watch The Godfather?
I had to watch The Godfather.
Did you not enjoy it? Or is it just like...
Here's how we turn away more listeners. No, I did not care for The Godfather.
It's been so many years since I've seen it. I can't work with you.
I don't dispute why people think it's so great. I don't dispute why it's like held up as such a classic. But I tell you that I think that movie was 40 minutes too long. I think they could have told that story in a lot less time. In addition,
like I just said, I haven't seen it
right.
in so long. I can't really argue against that. I just do remember that it was really long.
Yeah. Like, there's an episode of Family Guy, which you may have actually seen, in which it concludes with Peter explaining why he doesn't care for The Godfather.
I don't remember that.
It's an episode called Untitled Griffin Family History, in which the entire episode is they're locked in a panic room in their attic because thieves have come to rob their house.
Oh, wait.
And
I think I have seen that.
The room is flooding, and as they're about to presumably die, Peter says, "All right, since we're going to die, I have to tell you something. I did not care for The Godfather." And then it goes on to this whole like argument between every member of the family where Chris is like arguing the merits of like Robert Duvall's performance and Lois is like arguing for like the cinematography and the writing. And it's very funny, but like the best part, my favorite part of the whole thing is you know, I don't understand what they were talking about. I don't understand the language they were speaking. They were speaking a language of subtlety, something you know nothing about. I love the money pit. That is my answer to that statement. Like, I love the fact that they referenced the money pit.
What is the money pit?
The money pit... Oh, see, we got topics. This is fun. The money pit is a film from, I want to say, 84, 86, somewhere in that range, with Tom Hanks and Shelley Long.
He's using what I assume is the most unsubtle movie ever as his defense of subtlety.
I don't know. I haven't seen that movie since I was like 3 years old. It's one of my sister's favorite movies. But like, the plot of that movie is that they are a newlywed couple, and they are. It's strange how what an older movie it is that it's so kind of appropriate with like in this age of like the real estate market and like flipping houses. But it's about they buy this house that needs work. And they want to sell it, flip it, and then buy a dream house of their own. I think that's the plot. But the point is, like, there's all sorts of wacky, like, it's called a money pit because they're putting so much money into it, and it's just it's not working. And there's a whole subplot about how Shelley Long may or may not be having an affair with a Russian orchestral composer. And, like, there's a hilarious scene where Tom Hanks is trapped in a hole in the floor surrounded by an ornate rug. It's...
What?
You kind of have to see it. Like, it's classic, like, comedic Tom Hanks. Something we don't see enough of these days, in my opinion. I miss Tom Hanks as a funny man.
I like seeing Tom Hanks as the bad guy. It's just so...
What like, am I to Catch Me If You Can or something?
No, like, Road to Perdition. Have you seen that?
I have not seen Road to Perdition.
It's a good movie. You guys should go see it. Sam Mendes, I believe.
Indeed.
The man who brought you American Beauty. And, so playing against type for Tom Hanks, because everyone just thinks of Tom Hanks as the nicest guy ever. Which is also why I kind of like seeing his cameo in the Simpsons movie.
Right.
This is Tom Hanks saying, "You see me on the street, please leave me be."
Oh, the Simpsons movie.
I actually liked the Simpsons movie.
I didn't.
I know. I didn't think it was, you know, a change your life kind of Simpsons episode movie.
No.
But
it was, my problem with it was, and I think I've said this before to you, Nick, but not to our listening audience. My problem with the Simpsons movie was the fact that, yes, The Simpsons, when it first started out, was in that sort of really satirical, more thought-provoking sort of manner as the movie was trying to achieve.
Right.
But my problem is that as years have gone on, it's very similar to my Dark Knight argument, as years have gone on, that the, you know, the typical Simpsons scenario has been more related to, like, the real depth and breadth of, like, the Springfield community. Like, I think the film, one of the things that the film lacked was, like, okay, yeah, the Simpsons are the main characters, and they are enjoyable characters, but at the same time, the Simpsons has really become about things that can only happen because you're in Springfield. Like, it's not, you know, like, they go to Alaska in the movie. Like, they go anywhere but Springfield. Like, and it bothers me that they did, and we don't see near enough of the third-tier ancillary characters, because, like, they make the show, in my opinion. Like, I needed more, you know, Sideshow Mel or Disco Stew. I don't know. Like, I just needed something. Like, because, I mean, yeah, they did kind of use Ralph Wiggum to some humorous effect, and I always love that. But,
I like men now.
Ralph Wiggum. Ralph Wiggum is probably my favorite ancillary character on that show, because I identify him in ways with him in ways that are kind of probably disturbing. He just, like, he's so innocent, and he has a very positive outlook on the world, and he's like the sweetest character ever, but he's kind of an idiot. And just, I don't know why, but I identify with him in a really sad way.
Well, I like the part at the end where Martin is talking to the bullies, and he says, "I've been taking your crap all my life." And then he beats them up with a 2x4, and he's like, "Oh, this feels good. No wonder you guys do it."
I actually don't remember that. Like, I pushed so much of that movie out of my mind.
Oh.
After seeing it in the theater, I was so excited about that movie, but, like, it let me down. I mean, there were some moments that were a delight, like, although I do think they ran Spider-Pig into the ground before we even got to see it on the big screen, because it was so prominent in, like, the promotions of the movie.
Because it's the best part.
I mean, yeah, it is, but I think that really was kind of a detriment to it, because once we saw it, like, by the time they got to the third Spider-Pig reference, I was like, yeah, it's Spider-Pig, it's funny, haha.
He does whatever a Spider-Pig does.
And, like, over the credits, like, I with the like, slow orchestral version
that,
of the Spider-Pig
awesome.
Theme, which...
That was actually just sort of a joke that the composer put together, and the guys listened to it, and they were like, that's funnier than anything in the movie, we need to put it in the movie somehow. So they used it to underscore that one scene where he's having, like, that drug trippy sort of thing.
Yeah.
And then they just played it over the credits.
Yeah. I tell you, one thing about that movie I did like the Green Day cover of The Simpsons theme. I really did.
I liked that Billy Joe Armstrong was in it.
Yeah.
Personally, yeah.
I like any time, like, The Simpsons will have, like, an animated version of a real band instead of having, like, a real band playing a fake band.
Right.
Like, I love that bit that you've probably seen before where it's the White Stripes having, like, a drum battle with Bart.
No, I haven't seen that.
There's an episode where it's a recreation of the Hardest Button to Button video.
Oh, yeah.
Where, like, they're going down the street with the drum set.
Yeah.
And it starts out that Bart has taken up drumming, and he's going down the street with his drums and playing, like, beating the beat, and then in the corner, they meet.
Uh-huh.
It's Meg and Jack, and they're just standing there, and they have kind of a stare down, and then they start, like, battling with their drumming. And it's all in the style of the Hardest Button to Button video, and it's so awesome, and, like... This is in an episode, and the way it ends is, like, they go across a drawbridge, and Bart gets across, and just as the drawbridge opens, they're still drumming, and so, like, it's Meg and Jack White, and they're kind of standing in midair in that classic cartoon way above, like, the chasm of the drawbridge about to fall in the river, and it's just, like... I want to say Jack White says something like, "You bested me, Bart," or something like that. Like, it's something really ridiculous, and then they fall into the water. Like, it's awesome.
I love Jack White, though.
Jack White is a wonderful...
He's a dreamy fellow.
Creative person.
He's an eccentric fellow, though.
That he is. But, The Simpsons.
They have their moments, certainly.
In a weird way, we've kind of gone through the second episode, the second drunk episode was about comic books and comic book related things and comedy. We've suddenly turned this into animated series with the exception of our discussion of the unnecessary changes at my university of choice.
So if we're going to talk about animated shows, let's talk about the revival of Futurama.
Let's talk about that briefly, because
I am trepidatious at best.
I am as well, because
the four movies
have been unbelievably underwhelming.
Well, Into the Wild Green Yonder was not bad, it just felt a little off. It didn't feel like a Futurama episode, it felt like a well-written sci-fi show that just happened to have Futurama characters in it.
Yeah.
There was just something about it that didn't feel right to me. Like, especially at the end. Have you seen it?
That's the one I haven't seen.
Okay, do you mind if I spoil things?
Go ahead.
Alright. It's a longish movie. Leela becomes an eco-terrorist because she doesn't like the fact that Amy's father is building a giant intergalactic golf course.
This all sounds kind of ridiculous.
I know. Meanwhile, Fry has discovered that this random thing he has stuck in his head or something makes him able to read people's thoughts, which draws him into the secret society of people who want to use him to defeat the Dark Ones, who are never explained or really ever seen ever. And, yeah. And at the end of the movie, Zap Brannigan is chasing them through space. And Fry and Leela and what... Well, they realize they have to fly through a black hole to escape Zap Brannigan. So it's like, oh no, they're going to fly through the black hole and then the movie's going to end and we won't know how... Whether they lived or died.
Right.
So right before they fly into the black hole, Fry and Leela finally confess their love for each other. And they kiss. And then they fly into the black hole and the movie ends.
I feel like that would ruin the show for me.
Yeah. Because one of the whole aspects of the show that was so awesome was the whole unrequited love thing. Because not only can everybody relate to it...
It's the reason why Moonlighting was canceled after Bruce Willis and Cybill Shepherd finally hooked up.
Yeah, you just gotta keep the audience wanting
to pull that really old reference out of my ass.
Yeah, Bruce Willis was in a TV show.
Were you not aware of that?
No.
Oh my gosh, sir, Moonlighting. Moonlighting was a show that came on in like the mid-80s and... They used to show reruns on Lifetime, and it's like one of Kevin Smith's favorite shows ever.
Oh, wow.
Because it was like the show that introduced Bruce Willis to the world. Like,
not Die Hard?
No, not Die Hard. Moonlighting got him Die Hard. That's what happened. Oh. Moonlighting was this show in which Bruce Willis played a private detective with a very successful private detective firm. And his name was David Addison. And Cybill Shepherd played a former... It was very much like her playing an alternate universe version of herself. She played a former model named Maddie Hayes. And she was, like, rich and pampered and, like, something... I think she gets, like, divorced or something and she has to, like, find a way to support herself while she can still... Like, she can still keep her house and her luxuries, but she has to, like, find new ways to support herself, whatever. And she tried to take a job at this private detective agency. And, of course, there's a very, like, give-and-take... stupid, like, Sam and Diane office relationship romance thing going with David and Maddie for, like, 3 or 4 seasons until finally they hook up and that's when the ratings plunge. Like, that's what happened with Moonlighting. Like, you've seen the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, right? Because there's that thing about, like, it's kind of like Moonlighting, isn't it? Corey Feldman.
What has Corey Feldman been up to these days?
I'll tell you some things that Corey Feldman's been up to. I actually know this. I actually know this for a fact. Corey Feldman, there was of course a big lull in his career, and then he was in National Lampoon's Last Resort,
that no one's heard of,
which no one's heard of, but I have, and was terrible. And then he was in two episodes or just one? It was just one episode of this awesome show that used to come on the ABC Family called Big Wolf on Campus. In which he played, like, an alternate universe version of himself because he was a vampire? I think he was a vampire. Lost Boys reference, obviously. And then there was... He and Corey Haim had a reality show together called The Two Coreys that came on A&E. And that was last year for, like, 2 seasons. And then he was on, like, The Surreal Life and, like, all those...
Basically nothing of note.
Nothing of note. Oh, except for he has a cameo, as does Corey Haim in the Lost Boys... direct-to-video sequel.
Also not of note.
There you go. I don't know why we went on that Corey Feldman tirade.
Well, I was curious. I learned yesterday that I share the same birthday with Alfonso Ribeiro.
Of television's Carlton Banks of The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
Exactly.
Do you realize what song is going to be playing under this part of the conversation?
Is it The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air theme
song? No, in fact, sir. It's in fact the one and only Mr. Tom Jones... But it's not unusual.
I don't get the reference.
Really? Holy shit.
Does he mention Alfonso Ribeiro in this
song? Don't you remember on The Fresh Prince? Like,
I never watched The Fresh Prince because I don't like it.
Oh my gosh, wow. Well, there's an episode, well, there's a whole, like, running gag on The Fresh Prince that Carlton, played by Alfonso Ribeiro, who is, like, the whitest black man who ever lived, like, he's obsessed with Tom Jones. And, like, you've never seen anybody do the Carlton dance?
Not really.
He does this very distinctive dance while listening to It's Not Unusual by Tom Jones, like, in multiple episodes, and it's, like, become, like, an... It's one of those things, like, you see t-shirts of, like, Carlton sort of in mid-dance pose, like...
Does he do, like... I think I know what dance you're talking about, but not because I've seen The Fresh Prince. I think it's because they did a takeoff on it on Will and Grace.
It's possible.
Does he, like, sort of snap and sway sharply
side to side? And, like, swing his arms and... do this number and like this there's a part of it that involves like leg movement that I didn't realize was part of it until I saw, like, I want to say it was on a YouTube video that, like, Alfonso Ribeiro was at some sort of like TV convention and like somebody asked him to do the Carlton dance.
Well, as you also learned from Family Guy, Alfonso Ribeiro was also on a show called Silver Spoons.
That he was with Rick Schroeder.
Alfonso, were you in Silver Spoons? Yes, I was.
Because he's also working as a moving service worker.
Well, like Corey Feldman, his career probably hasn't been too exciting of late.
This is true. So, Corey Feldman, Alfonso Ribeiro.
Anyway.
Let's talk more about failed 80s sitcom stars. No, let's not.
Let's talk about the failed revival of Futurama. Steer back to that topic.
Yeah, we can finish that up, because they are bringing it back with, like, full new episodes.
Maybe it'll work better in an episode format.
I certainly hope so, and the only thing that they haven't confirmed yet is whether or not it's going to be all the episodes premiering on Comedy Central, or it's all the episodes premiering on Fox, like Family Guy.
Well, I don't know, as long as the writing is still as sharp as it used to be. I'm just so relieved that they're still going with the same voice actors after that. After that brief period where we thought they couldn't afford to pay their
salaries.
Right,
for those of you who aren't aware, there was a short time a couple months ago where the Futurama voice cast was like, they were kind of holding out for, like, you know, more money or something, and there was a short time where they were going to completely recast all these iconic voices in some horrible marketing ploy that, I'm sorry, but there had to... I'm really sad there was not even... There was even a period of time where that was a thing that was being considered. Like, I don't want to think of the universe where there was not a single person in the, like, executive office at Fox who was like, are you fucking retarded? This will not work. No one will watch it. Anyone who has a decent love of this show will hate you for it.
I would hate them for it.
Oh, as would I.
It's my favorite animated show of all time. I think it tops The Simpsons, but I'm probably in the minority when I say that.
I mean, I can definitely see where you're coming from. I like The Simpsons well enough that I don't know. Like, I love The Simpsons, but I can't say what I think is the best cartoon of all time, because I don't think I've seen it yet.
Right.
I just do know that The Simpsons is wonderful and really well written, and you know, it's endured for going on 21 years, and you know, Futurama is wonderful and well written and a delight, and the reruns are delightful, and you know, was it President Hoover coming out of a crate of canned eggs?
That moment put Jeff in hysterics. The episode we're referring to is Roswell That Ends Well, the Emmy-winning episode.
Yes.
And there's a part where the president is landing at the Roswell Air Force Base, and they wheel out this crate marked canned eggs, and all of a sudden the president bursts through the wooden crate for no reason.
Yes. Canned eggs. Rah, rah, rah. He makes that growling noise, which just makes it that much better. Like,
and no one blinks an eye.
No one says a thing. It's just President Hoover coming out of a crate
or
of candy.
Coolidge. I don't remember.
Was it Coolidge?
Might be.
Coolidge. I don't think it would have been Coolidge, because Coolidge was known as Silent Cal. He never spoke.
Right.
Or he rarely spoke. You want to know how I know about that, speaking of animated series?
Sure.
An awesome animated series that used to be on called Hysteria. Do you remember Hysteria?
I remember pre-Hysteria.
The horrible dinosaur movie with Austin,
yes,
O'Brien?
I've seen it.
Oh my gosh. The pre-Hysteria. Oh, you poor bastard.
Wasn't there also a TV show?
No. You are thinking of Hysteria. Hysteria was an animated series. I think you're thinking of Hysteria. Hysteria was an animated series that came on the WB, which don't hold that against it. Because this was back when the WB, first of all, back when the WB still existed, and also when the WB, in terms of Saturday morning cartoons, was more than just horrible American rip-offs of anime and Pokemon and Yu-Gi-Oh. This was back when they actually still were holding true to the Warner Brothers tradition of wacky animation.
Did they do Animaniacs, or was that Fox?
Well, Fox originally aired Animaniacs, but once the WB kind of got started, Animaniacs transferred to the WB for the
remainder. See, I remember watching Animaniacs.
Pinky and the Brain as a spinoff started on WB.
I love Animaniacs. I've been watching a lot of Animaniacs as an adult, and when you watch it now, you sort of realize that a lot of the writing is geared towards adults.
Same with Tiny Toon Adventures,
sir. And also that a lot of it, the content wouldn't be broadcast today.
No.
Because a lot of it is just so subtly adult and sexual in tone that you're like, wow, this is a kid's show.
Yeah. I always remember there was an episode of Tiny Toon Adventures where, I think it was the direct-to-video movie they did, but Buster Bunny and Babs Bunny are in, the bayou. And Babs and Buster get separated, and Buster ends up in this, house. He ends up in this bayou house with this, family of anthropomorphic, alligators or something, or crocodiles, whichever one it is. I think it's alligators, right? Alligators?
I don't know.
Well, anyway, this house full of, these girthy anthropomorphic, we're going to say alligators. And the big, father alligator with his, straw hat and his, southern ways. He has three daughters that he's been trying to get married off in that classic southern way. And at one point he sort of tries to make it that Buster is going to marry all three of his daughters. And Buster says, "You can't do that. That's bigamy." And then he's like, "No, that's bigamy." See?
That's awesome.
I always loved that. That was one of my favorite bits on that show. But talking about Hysteria, because Hysteria was another... Hysteria, because you remember in the early 90s and late 80s, a lot of the Warner Brothers comedy cartoons were Steven Spielberg Presents, because for some reason he dipped his toe in that universe.
I remember that, yeah.
Animaniacs, Tiny Toons, and Pinky and the Brain. Well, he also did that with Hysteria, and Hysteria was this awesome show that I'm sure a number of you might remember, in which they took an entire... It was an educational show, but it was in the classic Warner Brothers animated style.
Right.
Because they would take a topic about history, they would do, former presidents, or, the Wild West, or things like that, or, space travel, something historical that was really interesting, and they would put, the Warner Brothers animated spin on it. You would learn something while laughing your ass off, basically. And they had, a lot of great bits, a lot of great characters. There were characters like Father Time, and Big Fat Baby, who was just, an egg-like human baby who rolled around and made noises like, blah, blah. And
Big Fat Baby,
and Misinformation.
Of course.
And what was the old woman's name? World's Oldest Woman, of course. World's Oldest Woman, who was the horniest old woman in the history of television. And who else was there? There was Toast, who was this California surfer guy with a bad sunburn and a backwards hat, and he was voiced by Tress MacNeille, because when you're going to get somebody to play that character, you want to get Tress MacNeille.
I love Tress MacNeille.
She's wonderful. But there was certain segments, there was a segment with Toast that was called Ask Me If I Care, and it would be, he was a fake talk show, and he would have a guest from history on, and it would be pardon me, early morning throat caught moment thing. He would have a guest on Benjamin Franklin, you discovered electricity or something like that, now ask me if I care. And then Benjamin Franklin would be like, "Do you care?" And he's like, "No." And then he would push a button and Benjamin Franklin would go flying through the roof. It was ridiculous. It made no sense. And then there was what was the kid? Loud Kiddington. There was a kid named Loud Kiddington, and the whole point of his character was that there's a segment of the show where Father Time would come out and he would say, "Listen, for the next segment, we now are proud to present a true simulation of the sound of the eruption of a volcano." And they would have you turn your volume all the way up, and then Loud Kiddington would come to the front of the screen and go, "Kaboom!" It was awesome. It was so awesome. Hysteria was the shit. I miss it so bad. Old WB animation was awesome, because there was Hysteria, and there was Animaniacs, Pinky and the Brain, Tiny Toons, but there was also, you remember a show called Waynehead?
No.
Waynehead, this is a show that only I probably remember. It was, and don't hold this against it when you hear about it. Wainhead was a cartoon that was created and based on the child, and based on the childhood of Damon Wayans.
What?
And it was kind of like Hey Arnold with like an even more urban flavor. And it was like, I enjoyed the crap out of it. Like, I used to get very excited to watch Wainhead. But I'm lame, possibly.
Sort of like Everyone Hates Chris.
Basically, it really was kind of like an animated Everybody Hates Chris. Like, yeah, it was...
A show no one watches. I haven't met a single person who watches Everybody Hates Chris.
And you know the really sad part?
What?
It's now coming on Nick at Night. What the hell happened to Nick at Night?
I never watched Nick at Night to begin with.
But Nick at Night...
used to show, like, good old classic sitcoms.
The whole
like...
point of Nick at Night used to be, let's show classic TV shows like I Love Lucy and Dragnet and... you know, Mary Tyler Moore, and now it's, you know, the lineup of Nick at Night now, which some of these I'm kind of okay with because I'm like, it's, I think it's been long enough that we can consider those TV classics. The lineup on Nick at Night now includes the two first two are ones that I disagree with. Everybody Hates Chris, actually the first three are ones I disagree with. Everybody Hates Chris, Malcolm in the Middle, The George Lopez Show.
The George Lopez Show, out of all of them, that's the least comprehensive choice.
The Nanny, and Home Improvement, and sometimes Cheers. Oh, and The Fresh Prince. I agree with those last four. I do.
I like the classic lineup better.
I do too, but I'm saying of those of that set, I like, you know, The Fresh Prince, Home Improvement, The Nanny, and Cheers better. And Friends is coming to Nick at Night, not this year, but like in 2011 or something.
That makes somewhat sense.
Yeah. But, like, yeah, like I miss when they would do, when they would actually have, like, TV classics instead of, oh, The George Lopez Show just ended its run on ABC, let's put it on. Or Everybody Hates Chris just ended on the CW, let's put it on. Or Malcolm in the Middle, which nobody watched after the last couple seasons on Fox, let's put it on. And I'm sure they always said it in that cadence. Let's put it on. Let's put it on. But no, Malcolm in the Middle, that's a show that, like, when I first put it out on the syndication, and we used to watch it, me and my family, and it was funny, but, like, after a couple of years, it was just like, this is really starting to wear thin. And what's terrible is there's a show that started, that's about to start on ABC, and what really makes me sad is because I like, well, I don't like the cast, but I like the father character. There's a show coming on ABC that is called, not so creatively, The Middle. Just wait, Nick, it's about to get worse. It's called Middle. It stars Neil Flynn, who you folks
might... I love Neil Flynn.
You might know as the janitor from Scrubs, and he's wonderful. His wife is played by Patricia Heaton of Everybody Loves Raymond fame. But I don't really care for her. And then there are three kids. Three kids. There's a little precocious boy.
They've
changed it up a little bit. There's a girl who's really intelligent and kind of sees through the bullshit of her family. And then they have like a ruffian of an older brother. They did miss out because there were four brothers on Malcolm in the Middle. But the point is, the promotional photo for this show, I mean, they might as well be sitting on the Malcolm in the Middle set. It's Neil Flynn and Patricia Heaton sitting at the left side of the screen on like a love seat. And then the three kids sitting on a couch staring at the camera. And it looks exactly like the living room set from Malcolm in the Middle. And it's called The Middle. And it's narrated by the middle daughter, and it's like, it's a single camera comedy, no laugh track, you know, ridiculous situations narrated by the, it's an absolute ripoff of Malcolm in the Middle. It's just disgusting.
Well, I won't be watching it.
I won't either.
Despite my love of Neil Flynn.
Indeed, and I wish he would have just stayed with Scrubs, because Scrubs is coming back.
Again.
Well. See, I'm with you, but at the same time, I'm not.
Without JD, it's not the same show.
I do agree with you, and I kind of wish they would change the title, but I like where they're going with it.
I think it should be its own spin-off show.
That's what I was going to say.
They could make it like the Dr. Cox Hour, and it will be all the characters who didn't leave at the end of Scrubs.
Well, here's the thing. Well, not all the characters left, but let me tell you about how the show is going to be reformatted. Starting next season, which starts in January... Season 9, as it were, but I really wish they would just change the name, make it a different show, just spin it off or something. It's that the focus of the show is shifting from Sacred Heart Hospital to a medical school, where Dr. Cox and Turk are going to be like professors with a new crop of students, and the students are going to be kind of like the new young characters. And like, Dr. Cox's wife, Jordan, is going to be like a recurring character. Carla, Turk's wife, is going to be a recurring character. JD is going to be on there a couple of times. Like, he's got... Jack Rapp has already, like, signed on to appear in 9 episodes next season.
their chalk for the
fans. It should be its own show.
It should be its own show.
Because when you change the setting and you change the primary characters, it's not the same show. It should be its own spinoff. I'm sorry, that's my
No, opinion. I agree with you.
Listen to me, Bill Lawrence. Don't call it Scrubs. It's not the same show.
Indeed. I've actually been, like, racking my brain trying to think of a better title for it, because, like, there was...
Well, Scrubs is, like, the perfect one-word hospital show type.
It really is. But, and now that it's set in a medical school, I don't know. But what I was talking about, though, is Neil Flynn. He's the one cast member who is not coming back at all.
Well, it's a different place.
Yeah, but even Zach Braff's coming back for 9 episodes.
Right.
I'm just saying, like...
Well, he has to do his really important new show, The Middle.
Gosh, Neil Flynn, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry, sir. You're so talented. What the hell are you doing? It breaks my heart. It really does. I'm just like, gosh, there are so many better things you could be doing. Like, come back when Zach Braff comes back and you guys can have your wacky little prank relationship. Although, this is my feeling. In general, I agree with you. I just really wish they would have ended the show with the last episode of the season 8, because they... gave Zach Braff, his character, they gave him, like, the best send-off I've seen on a sitcom in forever. Like, it was such a perfect series finale. Like, did you see it?
No.
The series... Well,
I haven't watched it since it started getting kind of sucky.
When would you say that is?
I don't remember.
Don't say season 5, because I love season 5.
Whenever the whole pregnancy storyline started coming into being, and, you know... Stuff.
Oh, that's season 6. Season 6 is shit. Season 6 and 7 are terrible. Season 8... Season 8, which is the first season that was on ABC, was actually really good. Like, it took it back to its quality roots, like, which is why...
Those two seasons turned me off to it.
No, they turned a lot of people off to it. That's why the ratings plunged so bad. Season 6 and 7 were terrible. Season 8 was fantastic. And, of course, like I said, that was the last season with Zach Braff. But the way the season 8 finale ended, which, like I said, it should have been the series finale, is... JD gets like hired or transferred or what have you to a new hospital where he's like going to have like a higher role, and he and Elliot move away to be closer to that place. It's only an hour away from Sacred Heart, so that's how they're going to be able to explain him coming back to visit Turk and stuff like that.
Right.
But like they moved him to a different hospital, and like he and Elliot were back together. Like they realized like. After all this time, like, they really do belong with each other. And they actually did it really well. It wasn't just in this... It's a sitcom, and these were the two characters we've been trying to force together all... It wasn't like a Ross and Rachel thing, like, where they would just kind of shoehorn them back together. It really felt natural. Like, I really dug it. Like, they handled it really well. But anyway, like, they move on, and... But the last scene of this 8th season finale was J.D., as he's leaving the hospital for what presumably the last time, or the last time, technically... He walks down the hall, and as he's walking down like the hall toward the main entrance door, every memorable character he's ever encountered is standing at the sides of the hallway. Even ones that have died, like Brendan Fraser's character, were all standing there. It was kind of like a fantasy sequence, but it was kind of a goodbye. And they're all like saying goodbye to him and like, you know, saying their classic catchphrases, and it was delightful. And then at the end, he goes and stands on the front porch of the hospital, and they've put up like, and this was something they did earlier in the episode, like another janitor who wasn't Neil Flynn. Shame on you for having another janitor. Another janitor put up this big white sheet that, like, on the front side of it, they had written it like on in shoe polish, you know, farewell JD. But on the other side, it was a fantasy. It didn't really happen, but it was beautiful. Like, they projected, like, JD's future. And it was him married to Elliot with, like, a kid, and, like, Turk and Carla still married with two kids, and Dr. Cox and Jordan remarried with, like, three kids, and, like, they're all coming together for Christmas. And it was really... Like, that sounds lame. It sounds really, like... sappy and over emotional.
It sounds really sappy.
But I feel like they handled it well. I really dug
it. I want to know why sitcoms, whenever they end, feel the need to tell what happens for the next 20 years in a character's life.
Especially considering that we're going to come back and see JD in like 9 episodes.
Right.
Like,
the ending of the series finale of Will and Grace really was like that. They decided what I think they should have done is sort of ended the series in the present. Like, hope for the future.
Yeah.
Instead, what they did is mapped out, like, further 20 years into the lives of the characters within the course of an hour. Like, really?
Like, what happened?
With bad aging makeup and everything.
They did terrible aging makeup?
Yeah, because they were saying it happened 20 years.
I'm horrified just now.
I know, it's horrifying. What happens is, for those of you who don't watch it, Will and Grace, you know, they're best friends, blah, yeah. blah, blah, blah. Grace gets married to some guy played by Harry Connick Jr.
So they did end up together.
Correct.
Okay.
This really pisses Will off, so they don't speak for like 15 years. They meet again. Get this. This just pissed me off. They meet again when their children just happen to be living across the hall from each other in college.
That is horseshit.
I know. And, I mean, well, I guess there are such things as co-ed dorms, but like, the boy and girl living across the hall from each other, I think not.
They're trying to recreate, trying to say, they're going to be exactly the same.
Right. And so they run into each other when they're helping their
Please
kids
Please don't tell
move
me there
college.
Was like a college version of Karen and Jack.
No.
Okay, good, because
is,
that would have been
no,
too
no,
much.
No, trust me, it gets worse. Then their children fall in love and get married.
Bullshit.
This, of course, brings Will and Grace back together. Meanwhile, Jack has started supporting Karen because Karen is now penniless, and she is the only one who in 20 years looks exactly the same, as a running joke.
I do like that.
She looks exactly the same. Jack is supporting her. They're living in his swanky penthouse, and they sing a rather touching version of Unforgettable. But then at the end, they all go to a bar, and they toast about how, oh, we haven't changed at all. And then it's a very, like, ta-da sort of ending.
That
just pissed me
off.
That
is so lame.
That I know, it was so lame. Like I said, leave it in the present with hope for the future. That's the way to end a TV series. Because, I mean, like, yeah, I know we want to know what happens to the characters, but you sort of want to imagine yourself what happens to these characters.
You know what we've done in the past, like, 52 minutes we've been recording?
What?
We've spoiled the endings of so many things.
Oh, yeah, well, I'm sorry. We can call
no,
this a spoiler episode.
No, no, don't stop giving me new ideas.
Spoiler-sode.
No. Because remember, in the second drunk episode, it was when I had that delightful rant about Drag Me to Hell.
Oh, right,
In which we recap basically the entire plot.
Well, you know, people shouldn't be listening to our show if they feel that, if they don't want to hear spoilers.
This is true.
It doesn't matter.
We speak frankly about things. I mean, not to mention the fact that Drag Me to Hell is a couple months old, Will and Grace has been off the air since, like, 2005, and, you know, what else have we spoiled? That Futurama movie, which came on Comedy Central, like, 2 months ago.
Into the Wild Green Yonder.
Indeed, like, I think...
A title that I think has no relevance to the plot.
Really?
I don't know why it's called Into the Wild Green Yonder.
I thought, I was hoping they would go somewhere that had a green sky or something.
No.
Oh, that sucks.
Yeah.
That really makes no sense whatsoever.
It's nonsense.
Nonsense! Like that, wasn't that a play?
Yes. It doesn't make any sense, Will. It's nonsense.
That, you know, if we're going to talk about weird, like, nonsense things from, like, sitcoms, I'm reminded of something from Friends, which I'm not even really that big of a Friends fan.
Me either. I've never understood why people are such fans of Friends.
I think that show petered out after, like, the fifth or sixth season. I used to watch it with my family, but at one point I just gave up. But there's a line that my family's very fond of, and I've become a very big fan of as well, because I love the phrase moot point.
Mm-hmm.
I love the phrase moot point. But apparently there's an episode where Joey is talking to someone and he says, it's a moo point. It's like a cow's opinion. It's moo. Makes no sense.
Okay, I was going to think about moo point because my best friend Sarah's sister uses that phrase.
Moo point? That's probably
what it reminds me of Will and Grace. There's an episode where Will dates a closeted sports supporter played by Patrick Dempsey.
Of course.
And they go to this restaurant on a date and Grace is there, like, scowling at them, and Will is saying, why are you looking at me all disapprovingly? She's like, I'm just debating whether or not to add clam strips to my order, which is a moot point because they're all out and proud.
That's nutty.
I know. That show has its moments.
So you know what I just realized about the fact that we've recorded a trilogy of drunk episodes?
Mm-hmm.
Where we really kind of followed the formula of movie trilogies.
Really?
Because we had the first part, which was like, this is innovative and different. This is a new thing that's going to be very exciting. These two guys are sitting on a front porch smoking cigars and drinking wine and talking about, like, you know, sexual histories and things of that nature. And then the sequel, The Empire, if you will, is when things get really, like, dark and crazy and, like, someone's punching a futon and screaming angrily. And then the third one is the one where it's like,
We're going to talk about the resolutions of things.
We're going to talk about the resolutions of things, and it's going to be... I mean, this is no disrespect to us, although it kind of is. This has been kind of weak sauce compared to the first two, but it's been fun.
I agree.
But this is definitely a threequel. Like this is
a threequel?
Like this is definitely the third installment of a trilogy.
Also, I mean, we've always announced at the beginning, you know, this is the third of blah blah blah. So.
Yeah, yeah.
Now we have no choice.
So like,
to recognize it as the third.
So what if? So does this mean that we were only good when we had alcohol in us?
I hope not.
I really do too, because me and Nick, for the record, folks, we always have delightful conversations, but like last night was just aided by alcohol and cigars.
Alcohol may need to play a greater role in the recording of these things in the future.
They probably should. But then it might have to become like the drunkisode being like a sub-series.
A sub-series of podcasts.
Because of course there's like the best movie of all time sub-series.
Right.
And there's the, you know...
Forbidden Zone. Next time.
Forbidden Zone, yeah. And I'm wondering whether or not I need to... The problem is I don't know any comedians, so it makes no sense. I'm wondering if I need to do a sub-series called I Adore Films.
I Adore Films.
The takeoff of I Love Movies by Doug Benson.
Another good, greatest movie ever, Spaceballs.
You mean best movie of all time?
Yeah.
You got
Spaceballs.
It. Yes.
I love that movie. I used to watch it every year on my birthday. Oh, I didn't this year. And I didn't play that Beatles song, Birthday.
Oh, that's a shame.
But I played it the night before at the little get-together my aunt threw for
me. And I'll probably play it at some point in the editing process during one of the episodes from last night.
Anyway.
But we got like 3 minutes left before it hits an hour or so.
We'll talk about Spaceballs for at least
No. We should... No, don't do that.
And for that, I mean... I'm just going to advise everyone who hasn't seen it to see it.
That is true. Spaceballs is hilarious. I've heard... Recently, it's one of those movies that very recently I've heard a lot of, like, unexpected, like... I didn't realize so many people didn't care for that movie. But apparently a lot of people didn't care for that movie.
Well,
kind of blew me
away. The movie that I don't really care for is Blazing Saddles. And that's the one that everyone loves.
That's the one I've never seen.
It's really not impressive. I think that Young Frankenstein is Mel Brooks' best movie.
I do enjoy Young Frankenstein, but actually Spaceballs is probably my favorite, in all honesty.
Spaceballs is amazing. It's got that awesome scene where they introduce Rick Moranis for the first time, and he comes down the hallway, and he just stands right in front of the camera, breathing horribly for like 10 or 15 seconds, and just lifts the mask up, and he's like, I can't breathe in this thing! The imitation of Darth Vader, of course.
I do have fond memories of Robin Hood Men in Tights, but I haven't seen it, like, with a cogent mind in years.
Oh, yeah, me neither.
And even though it wasn't really his movie, per se, I did love the producers with Matthew Broderick and Nathan Lane.
Yeah, I couldn't watch the whole thing. I hated it so much.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Like, what...
It was just so bad.
You did... What was the problem you had with it?
I don't remember. I just remember thinking, this is a bad movie. I can't watch the rest of this. And that's rare that I should do that. Because I sat through the whole of the Boondock Saints. If you get me started on the Boondock Saints...
You'll have a rant like my Dragon to Hell rant?
Basically.
Awesome.
It's a horrible movie. Oh, God. And everyone loves it, and I don't know why.
I mean, neither do I.
Have you seen it?
No. But it's one of those movies where... It's one of those things where, like, it's like Twilight and Republicans. As soon as I find out about that, like, it's really... the only people I've ever known who really love Boondock Saints were people that I was like, I'm not entirely sure I want to know you.
Okay, folks, here's the rundown on the Boondock Saints.
Oh, gosh, no.
No, I'm going to make it quick.
Okay, make it quick.
It's a Tarantino ripoff that tries to disguise its tired, vigilante storyline with a really shallow philosophical argument, which is like... It's so thin, it's like paper. Like, you can tear through their argument in, like, a second because the script doesn't take the time to develop its characters. And it's just a shallow, pretentious attempt to stylize violence. And it makes no effort to go beyond that. People think it's the deepest thing they've ever seen with it.
And they're coming out with a sequel now.
I was not amused to hear that.
Yeah.
Anyway. Do you want to end this in 7 seconds?
No, I don't want to end it in 7 seconds. I want to try to find something that's... Ooh, lawnmower's going by.
Lawnmower, yeah.
I wonder if the mic can pick that up. I want to try to come to some sort of positive, like we did last night, but I know, like, we can't use That's My Mama again. That makes no sense.
It didn't make any sense the first time.
This is true, but I'm trying, like, we just left it on that really, like, down note of, you know, fuck Boondock Saints. Like, and I want to...
Yeah. Fuck the Boondock Saints and its sequel, All Saints Day.
Yeah.
Billy Connolly, why?
Gosh, Billy Connolly, why?
Because I love Billy Connolly, especially in Muppet Treasure Island.
Yes.
So great. That random line where he's like, don't go running with scissors or any other pointy objects.
Billy Connolly, you Scottish bastard. He took over the role of the teacher on Head of the Class after Howard Hessman left the show.
I've never seen that show.
That is a show that a lot of people don't remember, but here's a good way to go out. Can you remember that episode? It's like the second episode of the second season of Frisky Dingo, and you find out Xander Cruz was in a porn called Head of the Ass.
Yeah.
That's what it's a parody of. It's this whole thing about, like, and you know what? That wasn't even the real Howard Hessman! That's what that's talking about.
Oh, okay, I get it.
That's a reference to a sitcom that used to come on TGIF in like the late 80s, early 90s called Head of the Class, which featured a lot of people who went on to create awesome things like Keenan and Kel and Goodberger, Dan Schneider and Brian Robbins.
Yes, Keenan and Kel created some great things together. Sarcasm.
You're trying to drag it back to the negative again.
No, I loved all that.
You son of a... Wow.
I didn't like Goodberger, but I liked all that.
No.
I don't know, they're just like... The whole premise of Good Burger is one joke. Welcome to Good Burger, home of the Good Burger. May I take your order?
No.
They tried to stretch it into a feature length.
Good Burger is like one of my top 10 favorite movies ever. It really is. I'm so sad now. How are we going to... We can't leave him on that.
Okay, here's... How's this? I'll confess, I've actually never seen the movie.
Well, boom.
Well.
Boom. Then again, I've never seen Drag Me to Hell.
Snap. I just don't know how they could pull that out into a feature.
Well, they do, and it's hilarious.
We'll watch it sometime.
We should. That is definitely a candidate for the best movie ever. Best movie of all time. See, you got me doing it. I'm not trying to steal your copyright, Paul Chapman. I'm just...
Well, I just can't remember the difference between the two podcasts.
The sub-series on the OUP is the best movie of all time. The real podcast is called The Greatest Movie Ever, which you folks should go find on iTunes, but it's awesome. And Smodcast with Kevin Smith and Scott Mosier, and Doug Benson's I Love Movies. Find them all. Because those are the three podcasts that this show lovingly rips off on most occasions. Well.
That's my mama.
No, it's not.
Aw, he said well.
I know, it was... I'm trying to... Oh, we really kind of painted ourselves into a trying to find a happy ending corner.
Yeah, well, I thought we had found a pretty happy ending.
Hold on, I'm going to do something. This is going to be cheap. Ready? Oh, it's so cute. They don't even know what I'm talking about.
No, they don't.
My background on my computer. Bionic Woman / the second Doctor Who special planned to the Dead Star Michelle Ryan. In a down coat. So cute. Now you're staring at me with those weird eyes.
It was more supposed to be sort of a aw sort of face.
Really?
Really. It's so cute. Look at me's.
That is the voice that I, for some reason, employ when I find something to be, like just infinitely adorable. It's like, it's so cute. That's the voice that I employ. It's burning my retinas. It's so cute.
Oh, another thing. Go find a video game called You're in the Movies.
Oh, You're in the Movies. It's an Xbox 360 exclusive, folks.
Yeah, and you get to make your own films, kind of. And it's got the most Jewish narrator, if it can be called a narrator, ever.
It sounds a lot like the voice Johnny Brennan employs when he plays Mort Goldman on Family Guy. Hence our saying, you know, it's burning my retinas!
Yeah, like, it's almost offensive.
It's almost offensive.
Almost, but... Almost.
Slightly more offensive than our completely Gentile Jew impressions.
Right, yeah.
Which, that was terrible. But you know what? We're going to end it on that bit of racism. Because I can't think of a better way to go out. So, to recap, Warner Brothers cartoons used to be awesome. Futurama better have good writing when it comes back. Scrub should have ended.
The ending
to Will and Grace sucked. I, like, shoehorned another reference to my down obsession into another podcast because that is how lame I am. And then we made horrible Jew impressions.
That pretty much sums it up.
It's been that was certainly the morning after. There has to be
a morning after.
There's got to be a morning after. I wish I had that. I don't have that song, but I already have a song planned for what it's gonna sort of replace it. But anyway, thanks for listening, folks. You just experienced the Drunkisode trilogy with myself and my guest.
Thrilogy.
Thrilogy. Oh, NBC Saturday Nights used to have a thrilogy. Profiler, Pretender, and whatever that third show
Medium,
was.
Medium? Alias?
No, neither of those.
Oh.
Let's stop talking about new topics. We gotta go. Thank you, my guest, Nick Melton.
Oh, thank you.
Who is 24 years and one day old today.
Yay.
And thank you for listening, folks. And of course, seeing that it was the third episode in a trilogy, probably the worst of the three.
Yay!
But we hope you enjoyed it. And as I always say, go experience 7 days. Later, folks.